Blog Talk Radio.
As Greg Parks always says, if it's Sunday night, it's wrestling night in America, right here on the PW Torch Daily Cast. I am not Greg Parks. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, filling in for Greg while he's on a much-deserved vacation. It is awesome to be back here on the show. It's been a bit since I've been on, and there's a ton of stuff to talk about, some really, you know, some big shows, some big news, big developments, and we're going to cover it all right here on Wrestling Night in America. If you want to call in and talk wrestling, it's 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We've got some folks in the queue already, and we will definitely get we'll try to get to everybody who calls here with our hour-plus time here on the air to help me break down all things wrestling this week. Brandon LeClaire is on the line from PWTorch.com. Brandon, man, happy Sunday. Hope you had a good weekend. Super glad to have you on the show, man. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, man. So, I mean, I think we could start in a lot of places, but this is Wrestling Night in America. We're here to talk, you know, the big wrestling shows of the week. And it's, I don't know that I would consider it a big show with what they have on paper from a match perspective right now, but this week on Saturday, June 17th, so less than a week away here, AEW starts up with the Collision property, a new 2-hour show on prime time Saturday nights, the return of CM Punk. He's going to wrestle in a match, teaming with FTR this weekend on the first show. So there's not a lot to break down from a card perspective, but this is a big deal for AEW for a multitude of different reasons. Like, you've got the business of adding a second, like, top tier show to your portfolio of television content. That's big in and of itself. You've got the return of CM Punk being away since All Out last year. He's back into the fold. You got the kind of just the like week-to-week analysis on can Tony Khan book two shows the way he needs to, and can they perform the way they need to? Is there a market for two kind of prime AEW shows on a week-to-week basis? There's a lot here, and it starts on Saturday. So I want to talk about this show first. Everything that's gone down, Brandon, and being that we're a week away, what are your expectations for AEW Collision, and do your expectations, do you believe those mirror kind of what Tony Khan is looking to get out of the show?
It's hard to say because I often find that my vision is not aligned with Tony Khan's, generally speaking, as far as what he is looking to book and promote these days. And that isn't meant to necessarily be a knock on Tony. There are things that I wish that he would change and that he would shore up that I think would make a better product for everyone watching. But I do also acknowledge that some of it is just my own personal taste in wrestling. And there's some stuff that he does and likes to do that doesn't align with the kind of stuff that I like to see. I mean, it's hard to look at Collision and not feel like it's just a situation where AEW saw an opportunity to make more money on a contract, and it's hard to turn that down, especially for a company that is still, you know, relatively speaking, in its infancy. I mean, we're 4 years into this experiment or project now, but in the grand scheme of things, 4 years is not a lot of time. So I think that it's really hard to, and I don't envy being in Tony Khan's position. I would not want to turn down that money, and I understand why he opted not to. I think that it's a tough time slot to book, for one. I think that it's going to be very, very challenging to find an audience willing to dedicate 52 of their Saturdays a year to watch a live wrestling program. And to me, they're going to have newsworthy and noteworthy shows that are going to make people feel like it's worth their 2 hours or hour and 23 minutes when you subtract commercials to go back and watch the show on DVR, because I don't think that they're going to pull in a substantial live audience on a consistent basis. So there is a lot at play here. And I think that in the early stages, we have seen signs that this maybe wasn't, I don't want to say well thought out, but that a ton of time hadn't been put into the idea of how they were going to present talent on each show. We still don't know if there's going to be a roster split, and if there is, if it's going to be a hard split. We still don't know if particular wrestlers are going to gravitate toward one show or the other. We don't know if the returning talent, the sort of misfit toys that Tony has been reluctant to book in the past, like Miro and Andrade and Thunder Rosa, if those characters are going to hop between Dynamite and Collision, or if they are going to be exclusive Collision properties. Same goes for CM Punk. Does it depend on where the Elite is any given week? We don't know. And I wish that now, only 6 days out from the first episode, we had a little bit more clarity on that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah, you bring up some really, really good points. I mean, and I'm kind of the mindset at this point in terms of, like, do you go ahead with Collision or do you not? And I think I'm past the point of, like, where I'm like, oh man, they really shouldn't have taken on these 2 hours. And it's like, I mean, it's one of those things where I think you could say to yourself, well, yeah, obviously it'd probably be better to have a cleaner 2 hour show on Wednesdays and get that figured out. Mm-hmm. But and before you add anything, but at the same time, it's like, you have to have money to, like, put on, like, consistently good wrestling shows. And if you want to sign talent and you want to keep that talent happy, you do have to make money. So we don't know what AEW is getting for this second show or how it'll evolve into a future television deal. But if I'm Tony Khan, I'm thinking, like, yeah, I don't want to do this, but I'm going to, because it's going to be best for the long term for our company. The thing of it is, you really have to make sure you can tell some good stories and do some good work. Like if this show gets treated like, you know, Rampage after the first first month or month and a half that existed, you know, it's immediately recognized as a B show, and you don't want it to have that perception. I also think, you know, when you talk about the stars that have been, like, not, I don't want to say hyped, but who were announced for Collision, the Thunder Roses of the world, Miro, FTR. I think, like, you want to have an environment where you don't have fans, like, picking, oh, I'm a Collision guy, or oh, I'm a Dynamite person. Like, I think you want to have your audience think about all the different matchups that these guys can have, like, throughout the entire company. And that's part of the thing that I have with CM Punk. It's like, if you have him, like, kind of in this island on Collision, and he's only going to work with people on that show and people that he, you know, that are in his inner circle, it's like, well, you just, whether you ever go to, like, certain matches or not, you've just told your audience, well, look, these huge matches that you all want to see, Kenny Omega versus CM Punk, Young Bucks versus CM Punk at some point, Hangman again, perhaps, MJF. Like, you basically tell them, like, nah, that's not going to happen, and he's just going to, you know, feud against Miro on Collision. I don't think you can build a show that way, even if it is around CM Punk. Like, it can't be CM Punk against, you know, all these kind of mid-level guys. You have to tell some meaningful stories to get this thing off the ground. That's why I was a little surprised to see them announce the six-man tag. CM Punk and FTR against Samoa Joe and Bullet Club Gold, Jay White and Juice Robinson. That presumably is the main event. Brandon, do you like that match? Like, as, like, promoted as is? I mean, I think there's some issues with it, but But I'll toss to you. Like, it's the only match that we have announced for that show at this point, as far as I know. Do you like that for a main event? Is that a good enough way to kind of kick off the era of Collision and CM Punk's return to the company?
I mean, it's fine. Like, it doesn't stand out to me one way or the other as being particularly egregious or not worthy of a main event. And on the flip side, I also don't think that it is a strong enough match to necessarily pull in people that didn't plan on watching otherwise. I think that the money is in CM Punk having a big return promo and people, for better or for worse, getting a feel for what kind of CM Punk are we going to get. Are we going to get a really excited and rejuvenated and fresh Punk who is ready to work with the talent on the show and make this thing work? Or are we going to get some sort of disgruntled, bored, disinterested Punk? And I think that's the hook. And unfortunately, you can't build a show around that. You can't build a show around the meta inklings of your top star. But ultimately, I think the drama surrounding CM Punk is the hook for Collision right now. And I don't necessarily, again, think that that's a good thing, but I think that's just the way that it is. And I think that also speaks to the issue that they're going to have with roster presentation too. As you mentioned, you know, if Punk only has guys like Miro and Andrade and FTR and whatnot to cycle through, you're kind of left with one of two scenarios. You go all in with a hard brand split, and then at least from a storyline perspective, you can explain why guys like Kenny Omega and CM Punk are not able to fight each other, even though, you know, inside baseball, right, the rest of us know. The flip side is that Punk and some of his buddies or other misfit toys that don't get along with the rest of the roster are in a de facto brand split, not appearing on Dynamite, and that's going to be really hard to cover up. If X wrestler, let's say Darby Allin, is jumping between Dynamite and Collision on a regular basis, but Miro can only show up on Collision, and Andrade can only show up on Collision, people are going to take note of that, and it's not going to make any sense.
Yeah, great point. And you won't get the crossover either. Like, if you're looking for people to watch both Wednesday and Saturday, you know, if there's somebody that wants to watch wrestling to see CM Punk, you know, they'll watch on Saturday, you know,
yeah.
You won't even have a hint of them giving the product a try on Wednesday. Go ahead.
The thing is, realistically, if there's an argument for a brand split for any promotion at any point in American wrestling, it's AEW right now. I mean, that roster is just massive. And if they don't split off, you're going to get overexposure of talent and continue to see wrestlers fall by the wayside. And we could do a whole show on the dozens of guys who have been cooled off dramatically because they just disappear from television.
Yeah. I mean, the roster is, I would say the roster is big, and push back on this, cause I think maybe it is just me, but the roster is like big in number, but you know, you take Kenny Omega, you take the Young Bucks, and hello, everybody. We have experienced some technical difficulties, but I believe we are back. And hopefully everybody out there can hear me and can hear my co-host, Brandon LeClaire. This is Wrestling Night in America on the PW Torch Daily Cast. I'm PW Torch Assistant Editor Zach Haydorn, filling in for Greg Parks tonight with me, PWTorch.com contributor Brandon LeClaire. And we are talking, AEW Collision before you know, the switchboard here went haywire on me and threw a curveball. We're talking about the idea of a roster split and the idea of, you know, AEW being able to present two, you know, concrete rosters and taking it a step further than just, okay, there's a lot of people on the roster, but do they have the types of acts that you need to spread out across two shows? That's where we were at. And Brandon, you know, I ranted on it for a long time, and I guess only some people heard that. Maybe nobody, except for you, my friend. But what do you make of that element of this, of the element of like, okay, yeah, they have a deep roster, but do they have the right roster for a roster split at this point in time, you know, given the circumstances of, hey, you need main eventers on both shows, and if your top guys don't want to work with CM Punk and he's going to be – you know, one of the acts on one of the shows, you really have to dip down to the next level and bring some people up, whether they're ready or not for that type of push.
Yeah, I think to just quickly run down kind of what you were saying, you had mentioned, you know, obviously Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, John Moxley being guys that were likely to stick on the Dynamite side, which then leaves, you know, people like Bryan Danielson, Claudio, which obviously they're both part of Blackpool Combat Club. So you would have to split them up in order to make them viable for the Punk side. Obviously we've already discussed Miro and Andrade. Those are two guys that you can put in there and elevate to a main event level. And many have had solid arguments as to why that should have been the case all along with them. I think that Jay White is a great possibility for that side of the roster to elevate and bring him near the top. But you're right, Zach, the rest of the main event scene needs to be filled with guys that have been underutilized or underpushed or mishandled in one way or another. So you have someone like Adam Cole, who is finally trying to, you know, catch on again now after the injury. I'm thinking of people like Swerve Strickland, who a lot of people believe should be higher on the card. I think that it would be a good opportunity to elevate somebody like Malakai Black. Whether he is still with the House of Black or not, but get him in a prominent singles role. So that they absolutely have the like you said, Zach, the numbers. It's a matter of what the depth looks like. And right now, because of the way that AEW has booked their TV, there's a pretty sharp drop off after that tip-top main event level, and they would need to bring guys up and do it quickly. And one of the best ways to do that is to just feature them on TV consistently. AEW doesn't really have the issue that WWE has often struggled with, which is giving people who they see value in strong wins on television. WWE often goes to the cheap finish, whereas AEW has done a pretty good job of building up guys that they want to cater toward and center their show around. But it's going to be harder to pull that off if you already need them in position, ready to go for this new show.
Yeah, right. Good call. So Collision being on Saturday nights, I am looking for this first episode, which is – And I think like the there's a avenue for this to happen, even with the match that they have announced. But man, I think you have to set the hook on the show with something, with a big angle, like right out of the gate. And, you know, to give people the reason to, hey, we're gonna tune in again. And, you know, because I just don't think, look, like a great six-man match, even if it's like a really just tremendous six-man tag between those two teams, you know, and the wrestling is good all around it. I mean, that's not a problem for AEW. They consistently have good matches. But for this show being on Saturday nights in the summer, I'm looking for them to shoot some kind of angle, presumably with CM Punk, but I guess it doesn't have to be with CM Punk, on this show. I think this show, you need to kind of put out there that the show matters, and look at the kind of thing we're doing on it to bring people back. That's my one kind of what I'm looking for on this to determine whether or not they kind of have the right mindset about how they're gonna book it. Like if it's just, you know, a series of, you know, whatever, six matches, and, you know, there's a couple backstage promos promoting those, I'm gonna win, no you're not. Like, to me, that's not enough. I need to see them come out of the gate here with, hey, this is the storyline direction that we're going, and, you know, tune in to see more. You know, I think the pieces are in place. You've got Punk out there in a match. You do have, you know, him, you know, like people wanting to see him cut a promo. I'm not sure we'll get that, you know, on the first episode here. You might want to just save that until week two to give people, you know, another reason to come back. But outside of that, I mean, you have to write the show, I think. And I really want to see them, you know, come through with a major angle to set this thing off. That's what I'm looking for most to kind of judge the success of week one. What are you, what's on your list of things that they need to check off in Brandon LeClaire world for it to be kind of successful?
Yeah, I need to see that it's not going to be Rampage plus CM Punk, because
right.
That's the fear that I have, is like Tony is overwhelmed with the booking. He's already trying to do Dynamite plus Rampage. You're throwing two more hours into the mix. So, well, let's throw a bunch of great wrestling out there, and CM Punk's there, so that'll take care of itself. I don't think that will be a long-term formula that wins people over for a lot of the reasons that you already mentioned, and also the fact that they are competing for premium time. And what I mean by I mean, Saturday night is premium time for a lot of people. It's when they hang out with friends or their significant other or their family, or they're out, you know, seeing a show, going to a movie, whatever it may be. Like, Saturday night is a premium time, and there's a reason why historically do major weekly events on a Saturday, because you can ask someone to give up their Saturday night once a month for a pay-per-view or a premium live event or a UFC event. That's no big deal. That's a way to get people together. But the likelihood that you're going to get people to commit 52 weeks out of the year to watch a wrestling show on Saturday night is really slim. So to maintain a live audience, they've got to have the hook that you're talking about on a weekly basis, or unless they are just completely content with the idea that this is primarily going to be a DVR show. And if that's the case, I'd argue they still need that hook, because otherwise it's going to be really easy to just get lost in somebody's library and not get watched.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then it comes and paints a picture of, you know, why do you have a top star like CM Punk on a show like that when you have Dynamite live on Wednesdays?
Uh-huh.
Every single, you know,
and
what I mean?
And they can't explain that story in story. It's got to
right.
be – so, yeah, it's a mess.
Yeah, yeah. So we're talking about we said his name a lot. CM Punk is back. He hasn't been around since All Out. His recent, you know, run in AEW has been soured with injuries. Wins the world title twice and injured right after that in both instances. The latter in the match that he had in which he won the world title. That in and of itself, I think it should be a talking point, because it's a, you know, the question is, can Punk perform? You know, and he did some great things in AEW, you know, in that first run. The MJF program was tremendous. The Eddie Kingston match that he had, I thought was very, very good. You know, but you gotta be able to show that he can be a guy that the company can lean on from an in-ring perspective, not necessarily week to week, but, you know, you gotta be able to have matches. And then, of course, you have the drama of the brawl out and the fight and the Elite feud and, you know, CM Punk just totally emasculating Tony Khan up there at the media scrum. There's a lot going on with him right now, of course, and the return is going to bring all those feelings and those, you know, the memories of that to the forefront. Brandon, what's CM Punk's ceiling at this point? Like, what does he need to do for Tony Khan and for this show to, you know, it be considered a good return on investment for bringing him back, and not just the, you know, the financial impact that it has on AEW, but the kind of just the internal, you know, HR credibility that Tony Khan loses by, you know, kind of bringing him back at all after what happened. What does he need to bring to the table here for that to be worth it?
I think a lot of it at this point is out of his control, and I don't want to like give him a pass on it, because I think the reasons it's out of his control is largely his fault, of his own doing. In other words, Punk has done enough to sully his own reputation that he may no longer be a viable television draw. And so he may not have any control over that at this point, even though, you know, he got himself in that position. I don't know. I mean, early indications seem to suggest that Punk is not helping move tickets for Collision. And I know that the Canadian tour is not performing particularly well. I did hear that could in part be because Collision is on a streaming service in Canada, so it's hard for them to really get hyped up about a show that a lot of them don't even have access to, which makes sense. I don't know if Punk is going to move the needle anymore. That doesn't mean that he isn't valuable as part of a collective whole for AEW. But I think in order for him to be worth the money and worth the headache, he's just got to put his head down and do what he does really well. And that's talk, sell matches, and wrestle well. And Punk got progressively better as his run went on. There was obvious signs of ring rust in the beginning there. But when the lights were on bright, when the match was big, he delivered. And I think he needs to deliver again, and he needs to be the CM Punk that the women's locker room thinks that he is, and not the CM Punk that the Elite saw. I certainly don't think that the Elite are blameless in that whole situation either. But just, you know, he's got to stop making significant waves at this point, at this stage of his career. There shouldn't be drama surrounding CM Punk all the time.
Yeah. I don't have too much to add to that. Yeah, I think he's got to head down and have good matches, have good promos, and, you know, if he can make that work and he can, you know, hold the rating on Saturday nights, whatever the expectation is for that, whether it's, I don't know, whatever, 700,000 viewers or 900, whatever it is.
Yeah, like. I'm so curious as to where it slots and settles into and what they consider a success, because there's so little precedent in this day and age for a live wrestling on a Saturday night that isn't a special premium live event, a once a month thing. And I don't know what, do you have any sense of what they might expect to be in the realm of okay or too low?
I mean, once you circle past like this first show, because I think this first show is going to be treated kind of almost like a PLE in terms of people's habits. Like, oh, it's the first Collision. I want to see this, and it's Punk coming back, and I want to see that.
Like
Exactly. Once that wears off, though, I mean, I don't have like the averages in front of me, but let's say, you know, like a strong like average week for AEW Dynamite is 900,000. Let's just say that's like, let's just call that, you know, fact at this point. I can't imagine they're going to hold that on a Saturday night. Like,
no,
you know, I just can't see that. And I can't see that being the expectation either. Like, hey, you need to draw the same on Saturday night in primetime as you do on a Wednesday night in primetime. Like, that just doesn't seem, you know, very realistic to me. Even if you're Warner. So I just assume they're going to lose a couple hundred thousand viewers just off the top, just because of other stuff going on. And so that puts it at 700,000. And I think that's probably a little high when I think about it, but I think that'd be good. You know, I guess in my head, like, that would be a good kind of pivot off of Dynamite, as long as Dynamite stays at 900,000. You know, I mean, if they
split some of the audience, and my fear too is Rampage continues to drop. So like, even if you want to say, like, I was kind of thinking just off the cuff, sort of like, all right, the floor is Rampage. It's going to be a bigger show with more talent. So you hope the floor is Rampage and the ceiling is about 700. So, you know, they're just the fact that you're on a Saturday, you're not going to hit Dynamite numbers. So let's say that the ceiling is 700. Maybe they can pop a little bit more than that on a really big show. And obviously, Premiere notwithstanding here. But if the floor is Rampage, I mean, Rampage's floor seems to be falling almost every week. So they've got to keep that higher than the floor of Rampage. I mean, Rampage has been dropping into what it's consistently been in the threes, right? And has gone even lower.
It's gone lower. It's been moving around so much too, so it's hard to really get a good gauge. But I mean, gosh, I mean, if the floor is Rampage, I think they have to do, you know, considerably better than that, because
and realistically, Saturday's a worse day than Friday.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So,
I mean,
it's gonna be really
interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah.
No. But So I mean, I think, you know, CM Punk's gonna have a chance to, you know, and in some ways, it's really kind of poetic that he spent so much of his career like running against, you know, the man and wanting to be the guy and being the guy who's underpushed and being the guy who you know, wants the ball and wants to carry it downfield and
year long title reign with no main events.
Yeah. Right. And now he's going to get the chance for all that on his own, on his own show. So, you know,
under very challenging circumstances too.
Yes. And we'll see what he has in him. But, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to watch this play out, Brandon. And you know, the big television deal renewal has not happened yet, at least that we know of, from Tony Khan or elsewhere. So, you know, all this is – there's some pretty big stakes behind it. And it all starts here in just about 6 days. I wish we had more to talk about as far as like the rest of the show, but we don't know any other matches at this point in time outside of that one. Presumably, you know, we'll get some more on Wednesday night during Dynamite. I think that's, you know, you want to, you know, give people reason to watch. So my guess is we'll get a little more on that front. But yeah, any other thoughts on Collision?
No, I don't think so. I think we covered all of it. It's a really fascinating topic, and I think there's going to be a lot more to parse out too after we've had a couple of them go through.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Okay, let's go to phone lines here. We've got some folks waiting. If you want to call in, 515-605-9345, if you're listening live and you want to join us, 515-605-9345, press 1 to kind of raise your hand here in the queue on the switchboard and let me know that you want to be on the air. First up is 814. 814, thank you so much for calling. State your name and where you're calling from.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Ryan, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, man. Hope you had a good weekend. What's on your mind today?
My first question is on Money in the Bank. Do you feel this year could be a year where neither the man or the woman is able to cash in their Money in the Bank contract?
Cash it in successfully, you mean?
Yeah, they're unable to win the championship, either one of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, Brandon, what do you think about that? Like, the field isn't complete yet, so we don't know, we can't answer fully because we don't know, you know, everybody who's going to be in these matches. But based on what we do know right now, Brandon, do you get the sense that this is going to lead to kind of a crowning title moment for any of these people involved on either side in either match?
I mean, I think it's interesting because if you just look at the last few years, the men have had a lot of unsuccessful cash-ins, and the women have not had one yet. So if anyone is due, it would be on the women's side. However, the women's side is also the only match where I could see a successful cash-in happening. So it's hard. It's a little hard to predict right now. I think that if Becky were to win the women's side, then she's a strong contender for actually being able to successfully cash in. On the men's side, I don't really see anyone that screams, yeah, this would make a lot of sense right now. I mean, obviously, you don't anticipate that whomever is going to win on the men's side is going to attempt to cash in on Roman Reigns. So instead they would be cashing in on Seth Rollins. And I'm just, you know, kind of going through the list of potential competitors. And I don't know that I see anyone that jumps out to me that makes me think like, yeah, they could do with having him beat Rollins right now.
Yeah, the women's side, I think, is a lot easier to kind of get some, you know, real options on the table as to how the cash-in could go. I mean, I look at, like, Io Sky as somebody who could potentially win that match,
mm-hmm.
And Becky Lynch. Like, those are kind of the two women that I'm looking at to win. And I think both would have very different runs with the briefcase. Like, I think if you're Becky Lynch and you win that title, or that briefcase, to me it's got to be something to the effect of, that's how you get to Rhea Ripley versus Becky, you know, at SummerSlam, or something big like that, where Becky calls her shot, going to take down Rhea Ripley, and that's your way. That's just an easy way to get to the big main event. She cashes in, and, you know, and she loses. And I think that could, you know, give Rhea Ripley a big win. It gives her a big opponent that she can work with, and that she hasn't had since she won the title at WrestleMania. I mean, she just has not had, like, a who's who of opponents, but Becky certainly would be that. So if she takes it, Ryan, I think Becky could lose her cash in. And Io, I think it would be different. Like, her story would kind of be centered around Bayley and the implosion of Damage Control, more so than anything else. So I think that would go differently. On the men's side, that is, like, just way harder to predict, because you've got guys like Ricochet, you've got Butch in there. Gosh, who am I missing at this point?
LA Knight.
I forget. LA Knight, you know, there's so many, like, wires that get crossed up when you go through the potential scenarios for men's cash-ins. Like, LA Knight, for example, has been a hot, you know, hot topic, getting really strong reactions. But it's like, if you go with him and he wins this thing, you know, he's not going to cash in against Roman Reigns and win, presumably, unless something very, very big happens with him in the next 6 months. So that's not happening. And then, you know, you got this kind of up-and-coming babyface in LA Knight. Like, do you really want to present him as the guy who's cashing in on the other big babyface in the company in Seth Rollins, you know, in a very heelish way? Like, that is kind of counterproductive. So to me, like, the men's side is very tough. Brandon, sticking with this, and Ryan, I'll get back to you in one quick second, but while we're on Money in the Bank, I want to ask Brandon this question that I had here. Is WWE, or should WWE, let me put it that way, should WWE consider Cody Rhodes for a Money in the Bank win this year, to just have that, like, ace in the hole to book Roman Reigns versus Cody whenever they need to? Like, is that something that should be on Cody's bucket list at this point? You know, Brock Lesnar aside, like, he's not around right now, so Cody needs to be doing, like, the most important thing. And, you know, it seems to me that you could do something with that, but it's also really gimmicky at the same time. So where you're at on a possible Cody Rhodes win here?
Well, I think if there's any if there's ever been a year to do it, this is the one, because there isn't a strong standout. And I think that with anyone who wins on the men's side, you're probably going to be telling a story that's been told a whole bunch of times before. You're going to have a heel who cashes in on Seth Rollins, and either he beats Rollins by nefarious means, or he loses to Rollins, and then we move on. So there just isn't much of a interesting story to tell that hasn't been told many, many times before. So the reason I like Cody winning, for one, is it keeps him alive in the title picture. It keeps it front of mind. They could even tease the idea that he's going to go after Rollins and ultimately come to the conclusion where Cody straight up tells Rollins, you know, I'm not coming for you. This is for Roman Reigns. And then I think the coolest thing that you can do with that is have Cody call his shot, similar to, like you mentioned, with Becky Lynch, potentially at SummerSlam. I would just have Cody call his shot and say, this is the time, this is the date, see you there, I'm cashing in, and we're going to have a match. And if that's WrestleMania, that's WrestleMania next year. If they do want to do Cody and Roman again, it eliminates them from having to have Cody win the Rumble a second time, which I think is important, because I don't think you want to do the same story 2 years in a row and send that message to the crowd, because that is the kind of thing that could get them to turn. So if Cody has this Money in the Bank and he's just straight up with it from the jump, I'm hanging on to this and I'm cashing in at WrestleMania, I think you have a good story. And it's not something that they've really done with Money in the Bank in a long time, and certainly not something that they've done stretched over that long of a period. So I like it. I like that method a little bit better. And one last thing, too, to your point about on the women's side with Becky Lynch, I also, if this is going to be a Becky cashes in and loses thing, and this isn't necessarily what I would vote for, but they like to get one of the briefcases out of the way almost immediately. It would not surprise me if Becky won, cashed in immediately, and then Trish and Zoe Stark cost her the match to set up their rematch at SummerSlam. Mm.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, they don't like to toy around with two briefcases out there.
Yeah.
Too difficult. I like the scenario with Cody. I mean, and it's a good point in regards to how do you get past him winning the Royal Rumble a second time in a row to get to the Roman Reigns match, because they are on different brands, and so it's like that would be the only way for him to really get that opportunity. Money in the Bank is a way to get around that. So yeah, we'll see. The other thing is, like, if he does cash in that way, it kind of, like, you know, I mean, it could backfire in terms of, like, well, we're going to put Cody in this, he's going to call his shot for WrestleMania 40, and, you know, plus we'll just hope that everything is good with him when the time comes. I mean, I think that's an issue potentially, but also it kind of solidifies everything. And so, you know, if people know, okay, Cody's going to be in the main event of WrestleMania, it's like, you may have a situation there where, we're not going to mess with that, right? You know, like, we're just going to kind of go with it. That's what we're going to get. We're going to go with it. And Cody, there's an argument that he could stay more consistent with that out there and not have to worry about the week to week kind of ups and downs of Cody being Cody, for lack of a better term. And whether or not he can, you know, stay hot enough to be in that spot at WrestleMania. You could just tell your audience that, nope, this is the other top guy in the company, and look forward to that main event. So I think there's some value in that. It's a good call.
And they don't necessarily need to have him call it right away either. I mean, they could wait well into the fall.
Right.
The fall might be a good time to do it, or something like even Survivor Series, where that's the next time that the brands would cross paths and Cody, something can happen with Cody and Roman, and that's when he can make the call. They can hold it off so that it's not obvious from the jump. And again, they can tease the idea that he could even cash in on Seth Rollins. And then, you know, you get that brief period of time where they come to a mutual agreement that, hey, I'm not coming for your title. That gives them a couple weeks where maybe they can team up and they can kind of reconcile all of that. So it gives you a lot of built-in TV by doing that too.
Yeah, good call. All right, Ryan, thank you for the question. Great question, good topic. But back over to you for question number two.
I have a question on Magnum TA. Considering, based on a documentary, they said he was the most popular wrestler in the NWA at the time. Has anyone currently wrestling tried to at least use some of the stuff Magnum used in his gimmick or his style, or was influenced by him? Because I don't see too many people that have that Magnum TA style to them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there's elements of Magnum TA all around. I mean, when I look at that, I think of, you know, intensity of performance and just being really believable. That's like a big takeaway for me, you know, outside of good matches and good feuds and whatnot. And so I think you do see that around, probably not enough of it, Brandon, in terms of like believability, in terms of a character. But I think that's a big kind of piece of what he brought to the table. Outside of that, Ryan, I don't know. But Brandon, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, nothing really comes to me. It's such a different era. It's hard to drop characters, I think, and to take elements from those characters from that time period and have it work today, because everything is so different, and the fan base and the what the fan base expects out of wrestling is so different. So yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's nothing that I see. Like there's no one that comes to mind that really emulates him in any significant way that I can think of.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. I think that's why I've said like there's more like bits and pieces of it everywhere than like, oh, this guy is like, could you, like, for example, you could say MJF is like the modern day Rowdy Piper, like,
sure,
something like that, with the way he talks, and I think you can make different comparisons like that. With TA, I don't know that those are there, but just pieces of what he did, I think, are sprinkled around in everybody, and they should be. He was a very good wrestler and big star, and you know, very, very popular with some really, you know, really famous matches. And so, yeah, Ryan, hopefully that answers your question there. What's your third question for us tonight?
Third question is on Aubrey Edwards. How do you think she'll be transitioning to a professional wrestler, considering they mentioned on this week's episode of AEW that she'll be making her debut in the ring?
Yeah, Brandon, where are you on Aubrey wrestling or being in a, you know, a referee kind of transitioning into? Now, I don't even want to say transitioning, because it's just it at least at this point, I think it's a one off thing. Yeah, I don't want to lead the question any more than that. Where are you on it?
I don't love it. I mean, it also doesn't help that this is stemming from an angle that I just really didn't like at Double or Nothing. I mean, it's kind of just starting off on a sour note for me, because I just thought that the level of interference in that match and in most of the matches on the undercard that night was just so ridiculous and over the top that it started things off on the wrong foot for me. I get that the crowd is behind her and everything, but you know, I was listening to Todd and Wade on The Fix this week, and they both kind of were chuckling at the fact that few non-wrestlers have seemed more inclined to really want to show off what they can do in the ring more than Aubrey Edwards, and I'm inclined to agree with that. I think that she often sort of makes the segments she's in feel too much about her. I want to know who the referee is in a ring, but I don't want the attention to be on them all that frequently. And I feel like some of Aubrey's facial expressions and mannerisms and the way that she referees kind of almost intentionally tries to pull focus onto her. And so, I mean, I guess it's a good thing that she gets an opportunity to do it, but I don't know. I mean, Aubrey Edwards and Karen Jarrett is not what I want in AEW. It feels a little too Impact to me.
Yeah, I just don't get this one. I mean, I really don't. I mean, Ryan, to answer your question specifically, like, I think she's probably going to do okay. I mean, it's going to be a match in which she will be and needs to be, you know, supremely protected. I think her spots are going to be just uber rehearsed, and she'll be ready for him. So I have no reason to think that she's going to go out there and like totally like think to join up. But the bigger question is, what are we doing here? And it's just, you know, I don't find the story compelling. I don't, you know, look, I like Aubrey Edwards. I think she's a good referee. I think she does kind of attract some attention in matches occasionally. And, you know, look, I think you need to walk a fine line when you're a professional wrestling referee, because you want to have some personality, but you also you're in the background. You're the enforcer. You're there to, you know, make sure that the rules are there. And then you're like the backbone of a wrestling match. So you have to serve that purpose too. Most importantly. And so, I mean, it's going to sound harsh, but I really don't care whether or not she can win a wrestling match or not, or fight for, like, it just, to me, it's like, okay, why does this matter? Is this going to make people watch the show? I just don't think it will. And then to me, I also think that when she's when this passes and she's done with the story and she's done the match, it's like, it's going to be hard to like watch her, you know, as a referee,
yes,
moving forward. 'Cause it's like, you've done this thing, like you've got involved in these matches. So I don't see that the follow-through on this is going to work very well either, Brandon. Go ahead.
Yep, it's hard. It's hard to put the cat back in the bag once it's out. It's kind of like
right, exactly.
It's kind of like Earl Hebner in WWF when he was involved.
Yep.
You know, once you have him involved in multiple screw jobs, well, then people are thinking about the fact that Earl is a crooked ref and he can be bought. And I think the same thing can be said in this scenario. Once Aubrey Edwards leaves her post and becomes a competitor rather than a person who is enforcing the rules of a wrestling match, then I think that's always in the back of your head, and you're kind of wondering, all right, who's going to piss her off next? Who is she going to get involved with next? And I don't think that you want that. I don't think that's a good way to build a wrestling program.
Yeah, no, exactly. Absolutely, I agree. Ryan, thanks so much for the call, man. Hopefully you have a good week, and make sure to call again. Appreciate you.
Okay, thanks for taking it.
Yeah, thanks for making it, man. All right, we'll keep the phone lines going here. We'll go to 615 next. 615, I believe this is Sean in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Sean, what's going on, man?
Well, I was going to say, if Gray's going to take a vacation, which, Zach, you said early on, he definitely deserves it 100%. But if he's going to, well, first, Greg, we miss you. But secondly, if he's going to, these are the two guys I want to have. Guys, I appreciate y'all. How y'all doing? It's good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, man. Thanks for calling.
And thanks for the heads up that no one could hear Zach but me.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, switchboard.
Freaking Blog Talk. Freak you, Blog Talk, you stupid thing, every once in a while. Doggone you. But anyway, I wanted to say, too, I wanted to go back to what you were talking about, because you guys had a great conversation on Collision, because I've got many thoughts that I won't go, you know, in depth on here, but I've got many thoughts that I can, you know, obviously direct message you and talk to you guys about, too. But with CM Punk, the only thing I want to say is he, of all the things you guys already said, you know, again, the age is still an issue for me at times, and he has been hurt, which, again, not everything was wrestling-related, but it's still injuries, and you still have to worry about that. He could go and have this match on Saturday and get hurt again. Who knows? And then what do you do if you're AEW? So I think that's what do you think about that?
Yeah.
Because I think that could still be an issue, you know? Like, what if he gets hurt? Then they're screwed. Well, what do you do?
That's what I'm saying. It's like that – it's like it's almost like it's an issue that if the brawl out didn't happen – we would have had 9 months of different conversations regarding CM Punk. It's not if he's going to come back and who's going to work with him, how's it going to be politically backstage. It would have been, man, this guy had two huge title matches and, you know, didn't make it out of, I guess he made it out of the first one unscathed, but then, you know, kind of had a freak kind of foot injury. But second one, then again, like two pretty, like very serious injuries back to back. And I think that would have like, really held down kind of the analysis of this move over the political drama. So I agree, Sean. It's a really big issue, because at that point, I think if the idea now, Brandon, is to like keep rosters somewhat split, CM Punk's going to anchor the show and, you know, the show's going to run as he does. If you lose that, it kind of, not only does it like hurt because you're losing CM Punk, who's a big star in the company, but you also, I think in my eyes, you lose kind of the whole strategy of how you're going to set up both shows. Like, I don't think you can have Collision without CM Punk and without everybody else. Like, you'd have to go to like, okay, our wrestlers are crossing over to each show, which opens up so many more logistical things that you have to figure out just on the working side. Like, are they going to be on the road all that time? And how does that work? And who wrestles when? Like, there's a whole other batch of stuff that you have to worry about if he gets hurt again. So it is a big issue, but it's kind of like just way down on the list, I think, Sean, because of everything else that comes with, you know, a CM Punk return to AEW at this point, thanks to Brawl Out. So Brandon, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, as far as we know, you know, Warner Discovery, part of the reason they were interested in this second major property, third overall, was because they wanted a vehicle for CM Punk. So, I mean, Collision was really born as CM Punk's show, not totally unlike, I mean, this is the closest thing we've had since, like, SmackDown being created for The Rock. Like, Collision is CM Punk's vehicle. So without him, I think the idea for the show, I mean, obviously it can be quickly rebranded, and just like SmackDown survived without The Rock, Collision can survive without CM Punk, but I think that the heart of why it was introduced now be gone, and then you're sort of floundering for new representation for that show, and then you're at a point where if there's no reason to separate the roster in any way, you're going to get overlap, and then I worry about the tendency of Tony to just fall into the same booking patterns that he has on Dynamite. You don't want a clone of Dynamite on Saturday night either. And keep in mind that if there isn't any sort of split, it's probably more beneficial to fly out a lot of the same talent to both shows, which means, you know, again, you're going to get the double up. So I think that, yeah, I mean, if Punk gets hurt, they have a significant issue. And it isn't, you can say, I mean, it, you can certainly say that it's two freak accidents for Punk, but at the end of the day, like, I don't remember how many matches he had in between returning and then Brawl Out. Like, I don't recall how many matches were in between that from the time that he returned from his foot injury to the time that Brawl Out happened. I can't recall how many matches he had, but
it was just one. It was two, yeah. I guess. It was the, like, so. Kind
yeah,
of
one,
like,
one,
the
okay.
really
yeah.
short so, John Moxley match and then the pay-per-view match.
Okay, so Punk has been severely injured in two out of his last four matches. So 50%.
Yes, although the foot injury, I don't know if that happened in a match. I don't know. I don't.
Yeah,
it happened
that was freak,
in that dive into the audience, right?
I thought that it happened, so did it happen in the dive? So it happened right after the pay-per-view on Dynamite.
Right.
And
right.
So are you saying it happened in the dive into the audience and then the match exacerbated it? Because he had a six-man with FTR.
I think so, if I'm remembering right.
Okay.
But your point stands regardless.
Right. Two out of four, which is that's not good. I mean, can it be horrible luck? Yeah, absolutely. But you also have to remember, I mean, this is a guy in his 40s now who has not been actively competing for many years, aside from the brief, you know, runs that he had in AEW. And, yeah, you have UFC runs thrown in there, but still, like, the body changes. And a lot of these guys that are in their 40s and still doing this regularly haven't stopped for 7 years. Like someone like AJ Styles, for example, didn't take 7 years off. So it's certainly a risk. I mean, you've got to think that it could happen again. And if it does, yeah, I mean, that's trouble.
Sean, back to you.
Yeah, and then I wanted to bring up, too, I mean, I'm definitely curious, like you guys were saying, about the summertime, you know, ratings when it first, you know, gets going, because I'm telling you guys, and I know you agree, when it gets August, man, college football, they are going to get demolished.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are not going to – they if they could do 200-something thousand or maybe 100-something thousand, I don't know if they would do a lot of viewers, because college football – has 100, like, millions and millions and millions of viewers on Saturday night. There's no way anybody's going to want to watch Collision over college football unless you're a diehard, you know. It's going to be really bad, and I'm curious to see what happens. And that's what makes it very intriguing,
Sean, don't forget, too, that once, even though college football only runs like 12, 14 weeks in total or whatever, I mean, save your bowl games at the end of the season, as soon as the regular season wraps up, the NFL starts shifting games to Saturday night too. And then you get playoffs right after the holidays. So they're going to be hit with football right until all the way to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, for five months at least.
Are you discounting the XFL games as competition? Come on now. Come on. They clearly know what they're running up against. Like, that has to be baked into, like, yeah, they're going to be getting killed, but, like, what's the expectation for that time? Like, we don't know, and we probably never will know. But, I mean, I do give them the benefit of, like, they know that. You know, they do know that that's going to happen, and they, you know, so it's all a matter of, you know, perspective at that point. And I guess, like, the real thing will be, you know, in year two of collision. Like, because then you can look at, like, real to real in terms of, like, okay, college football year one ratings compared to college football year two ratings. Like, you can really start to then see true trends. But it's going to be impossible to kind of give the ratings data, the ups and downs of a rating, really any kind of, like, cold, hard analysis, because you can't compare, you're not going to be able to compare, you know, June, July episodes of Collision to September episodes of Collision with college football. It's just that two totally different worlds.
And all of this aside, too, I mean, it's also possible that Warner Discovery just doesn't care, and they just value live TV, regardless of what night of the week it's on.
Right.
They just value live programming, and that's all that matters at the end of the day. Because, they're going to get killed in the fall, but I don't think there's any reason to think that they will fare much better during the summer, because people are out. People are out during the summer on a Saturday night. They're enjoying their time. I can tell you now, just from my own perspective, I mean, obviously I watch a ton of wrestling. I do this for fun. Like obviously I am the target market for Collision, and I can't tell you how many times a year I'm going to watch that show live. I mean, a couple, maybe.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Sean, what else you got for us today, man?
Yeah, so I had some main questions. I'm sorry to bring that up, but I just wanted to bring those few things in there. But I had a couple main questions. The first, I wanted to stay in AEW. I wanted to go to the stuff with MJF and Adam Cole this week, because I know I know Wade and Tyler talked a lot about it on Wednesday. But MJF again is great. I still think a lot of that stuff he said on Wednesday was still a lot of meta. You know, I don't think he should bring Vince McMahon's name into any of his promos. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I don't care because again, it's too true. It rings true. That's what Vince thought. We know that. We don't need MJF saying it. I number one, I think they're going to this way too fast to have a match next week, the Eliminator match. Again, like Wade was saying, we don't even know what that is. Like Adam Cole could be a legitimate guy to take the title off of MJF, and I think they're rushing this way too quickly. Adam Cole is not—he's over as a face. There's no doubt about that. I want him as a face. He's in the right role, but I just give him some, like, Jericho to me. I feel like he's really cold, and to him to beat Jericho a couple times really didn't feel big to me. And just to have him go right to this MJF stuff, I just don't really like it. I don't think they're on the right track with that. So I wanted to hear what you guys thought about the promo, everything about all that, and how quickly they're going to this MJF Cole match, because to me it just seems way too fast.
Great topic. Brandon, what do you think? Go ahead and take that first.
Yeah, when Cole came out to interrupt MJF on Wednesday, I sort of groaned. And the reason is because I thought that this was going to be MJF's next big opponent. So I was thinking all in or all out, not like a potential summer pay-per-view style hyped episode of Dynamite. And that's what it feels like they're headed toward. Because if you take any of MJF's major pay-per-view challengers, I don't think that they have given away an Eliminator match on TV before going to the match on pay-per-view. So that tells me that they just don't view this as a major title match. And I think that's wrong. I think that the crowd was ready to get behind Adam Cole in a really big way. I thought that the feud with Jericho was meant to be a jumping off point to elevate him to that next level. I would have much preferred that Cole get involved in another story or kind of be waiting in the wings. You know, you hear that he's gunning for MJF, but he's not quite making his move yet, so that they could build to a big match for late summer, early fall. But it just seems like they're going to it right away. And I mean, that tells me two things. One, that they're not all that, you know, hyped about where Adam Cole is at. And two, that MJF's just going to beat him and we're going to move on. And I think that is going to really hurt a character who I thought should be a major, major player for AEW. And I think a lot of people have been really, really let down by his run so far. And I am certainly in that camp.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit higher on this than you guys seem to be. And I want to preface this by saying that I certainly would have gone about, you know, Adam Cole becoming like a hot challenger for MJF in a different way, without question. But I don't see this match on Wednesday night being like, you know, the only chapter in this Cole MJF book. Like when you look at, like, even if you just, by the process of elimination, who can MJF have pay-per-view matches with at this point? I mean, it's Adam Cole, Adam Page, you know, and then, like, you've pretty much done everything else. And so, like, he has to be a big-time challenger. And so while I think it's kind of an ill-fated decision to kind of book this match, I view it as just chapter one. And, you know, instead of it being an angle, instead of it being a promo, like, it's going to be out of this match, and the story really gets going from there, because that's how AEW has done things in the past. Like, they, you know, they do weird matches, like a title unification match between Jon Moxley and CM Punk days before the pay-per-view. Like, that's happened before. They use these types of things to draw numbers and to draw ratings, and then kind of, like, pick up the pieces after that. So I think that it would have been a better play to just have Adam Cole, you know, win some matches, talk big about winning the world title, have that encounter with MJF, and then you go to the match. But to me, it's like, this match is going to really set into motion what they do. But I still fully expect this match to be, you know, a main event title match at All Out or All In, I guess. But but definitely, like, the pay-per-view here. Go ahead.
Do you think that they can get it to be as hot of an issue, that given that they'll have already given the match away on TV, and we assume
that's
that
the thing. No.
So Cole has to win, because if he doesn't, then he doesn't get the title shot. So Cole's got to win by some means. So you've already done.
I don't know. I don't you think that there's a way that you could have Cole lose this match, but then spend the whole summer chasing and getting wins he needs to get the title opportunity again. Like, that's what I was thinking would happen. It's like,
yeah,
you do this and then you kind of build your way back up. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but
yeah, it depends on how they define championship eliminator. I mean, if it's a championship eliminator, if you win, that's the thing. They've never been clear about it. If you win, then you get a guaranteed title match. But if you lose, does nothing happen? Like,
yeah,
we've never
right.
been told that, because
right.
usually championship eliminators are against guys that you don't think are going to get title shots anyway. So they've
That's
never had a
true.
Like, they've never had a reason to explain it, because it's
yeah.
just like the Kingo or something, like somebody that's not even under contract.
Right.
So
yeah,
I mean, do they say yeah. if Cole doesn't win, like if a championship eliminator, does that eliminate you from challenging said champion for his entire reign? We don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This is why you need definition. But, like, here's the thing, though. I mean, he can't win this match. I really don't. He cannot win this match. I mean, that is, like, you know,
think
for a lot of reasons. I mean, and the big one being, like, you know, somebody pinning MJF at this point for that title is, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it's nowhere near Roman Reigns level, but it's a big thing. It's like a mm-hmm. like a key piece of booking that Tony Khan has in his toolbox of, like, here's how we're gonna make another really big star, and here's how we're gonna, you know, crown, like, our next, you know, big babyface champion. Like, you can't give away that pinfall in a non-title match on TV with a week's build. Like, that cannot happen. Even if it is kind of like some kind of shenanigan finish.
Yeah, you've got to do a non-finish, or you can't deliver, or you've got to do something cheap. Which, man, that just says to me, don't book the damn match. Like, don't put yourself in that situation.
Yeah, but yeah. So I mean, but either way, I think this is the beginning of something. Like, I don't think this is like the last time we're gonna see MJF versus Adam Cole. Like, where you normally plug in, okay, insert angle here to get to the match that we want. You know, it seems to be that a strategy that Tony Khan has is, well, let's do a match of some kind. We'll try to get a number with it, and then, you know, the whatever angle. We'll just work with the pieces we have left. And that hasn't proven to be successful, by the way, because you had the whole thing with Moxley and Punk, and that was just really, really weird. And you know, I think this is going to follow suit, but I don't look at this and go, ah, well, here goes Adam Cole's chances though. Either it's one of the bigger matches that they have left to do. And it is odd to put it this way, but yeah,
they need a big title match too, because like, I get that the four-way at Double or Nothing was excellent, and I don't disagree with that at all, but the angle was lacking. I mean, the pillar story was not great, and I think crowd reactions bore that out in the lead-up to Double or Nothing. People were not invested in those guys as challengers, and it presented the exact same problem that MJF had with Adam Cole this week. He is a heel speaking too many truths. He says many things that are absolutely correct, and people recognize that. When you're a heel, you're supposed to be a blowhard who lies through his teeth and makes things up about the babyface that the babyface can then prove wrong. MJF just says the truth about these wrestlers and exposes all of their shortcomings.
Well said. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in the promo, like, I think it just left a little to be desired too. Like, it just is kind of like low hanging fruit as far as that stuff goes, like Cole's size, his, you know, body type. Like, it's like, we've been there. We've done that with
Cole. And the steroids thing, like, man, I don't look at MJF and think like, man, that's a steroids guy. Like, why do you even want to put that in fans' head?
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
It's not Brian Cage. Like,
yeah, right. I mean, yeah, and that's just the kind of, I don't know, that's just one of those weird, you know, things too, where it's like, that's not going to be like a part of like the story here. That's just like a one-line zinger for like the ooh-ah, and then that's it. Like, it's not going to, you know, he's not going back to that, I wouldn't think. Sean, back to you. We kind of hijacked the conversation there, but any thoughts on that stuff or another question or topic?
Yeah, going back to what you just said, and that's my thing, what Brandon was alluding to. I just don't see MJF losing the title in this next 6 months. And so you have Cole lose, and then where do you go? Like, you've already lost all these other four guys that have already lost. Danielson's already lost. I mean, Danielson, again, can end up getting back at some point if he wants to do something. Moxley, you still have in your, you know, your trigger at some point, maybe next year. But I just, Cole's one of those guys I would like to see win the title, and I just don't think he's going to win it. And that's what's really disappointing. I don't know where he goes from there. So I'm curious to see what they do. I hope there's something good in the wings. But going to the AEW women's division, I wanted to shift gears to that, because I think the women's division, I'm not in love with it at all either. I just on either side. I think the way – yes, Chris got a – Statlander got a big pop when she came out of Double or Nothing. I get all that. For Jade to lose the title the way she did, I just thought was stupid. I really, really did. I don't think that's the way to give a babyface a title. I don't like it. And since she's had two titles matches on TV, that all she's done is sell the entire match and win with her finisher basically at the end to win the match against Nyla Rose, who's been defined down, and Anna Jay, who has no chance of ever winning a championship. I just don't think that helps Statlander in any way. I don't think she's on a very good track. Now, Jade could be gone. We haven't heard why Jade's gone. There's probably a reason why she's not back. But I just think they had something with her, and I think they've ruined her in a lot of ways. And then going into the main title, you know, unfortunately Jamie got hurt, and that's why Tony, you know, had to win the title. But the titles just feel so cold in AEW in the women's division. Neither one feels big. Neither one feels important. And I guess hopefully Jamie comes back and can win it when she's healthy. But what do you think of the state of the women's division on both sides with both titles?
Well, Jamie Hayter not being there, I think, very much hurts. You know, it just hurts kind of the whole division, because I think she really had worked herself into a position where she was, you know, a really good champion. Like, I think she had really good matches, and she, you know, didn't have like great challengers or a great story or anything. But like, it, you know, I thought she brought some credibility, some swagger to the title, and so for her having to drop that unceremoniously to Toni Storm, I think just hurts, and just inevitably is gonna toss cold water on on the division. So they need to pick up the pieces after that. As far as like Chris Statlander goes, to me they had a really interesting puzzle there in terms of what to do about Jade Cargill, because I think that like Jade has gotten herself into a position where she was the B women's champion in the company, but that like an A women's star in the division. And that always, it was going to be a difficult situation to get her out of that. And I think what AEW did at Double or Nothing was like, okay, we're going to make an attempt to try to do this. And we're going to put the title on, you know, a more of a second tier star in the women's division in Chris Statlander. But we can't do that in the traditional like big match way, because we want Jade to move on. We want her still to be a star. We don't want, you know, someone the caliber of Chris Statlander just to beat her straight up. And so what they cooked up is a scenario in which Jade can lose. Chris Statlander gets her big kind of her big return moment. She gets the big win. The championship is now around the waist of kind of like a B-level star in the women's division, and Jade can kind of go away and come back and still be protected. I think that's what they were working towards. But you're right, though. When you like, Jade clearly was the priority in how that went down. It was, okay, we need to make sure that Jade Cargill is fully protected coming out of this. And I don't – I mean, it remains to be seen. Like, if she comes back and she – you know, jumps up to the Women's World Championship picture and has really great feuds with Toni Storm and Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter and that group, you know, I think you'll look back at this and go, okay, well, it was just a necessary thing that had to be done. And yes, did it hurt, you know, Statlander's title win? Absolutely. But look at where Jade Cargill is now. If that doesn't happen, though, you know, you don't give the title win the due that it needed, because Chris Statlander beating, you know, Jade Cargill is a big thing. But yeah, the way she did it was not like, you know, a babyface way in nature. It was a little kind of schemey and underhanded. But when you factor in everything else that's kind of around the situation, I think you could make that make sense. But Cargill was the priority, and I think that's the bottom line in terms of how to kind of analyze how that title situation went. It's a lost division right now, I think, Brandon. Like, it's kind of just it hasn't had its place in its footing in the company for quite some time. I mean, you had the Outcast thing going on. You had Jay with the second title, Jamie Hayter not really feuding with Britt Baker. Like, you know, you just had all these things that just like are happening, but not really clicking on all cylinders. And I think it's kind of more of the same right now. So it's like, to me, it's the more things change, the more they stay the same type thing with the women's division. They need a star. And they don't have that star yet. And until they do, I think we're going to be having the same conversation over and over. Brandon.
And every time they get a new star, we kind of talk about the idea that, like, okay, this could be the one. And strap the rocket to her, get the title on her, and build the division around her. I've said it about a lot of the wrestlers they brought in, and none of them have worked. And I don't know if that is... It just the talent isn't quite at the level that WWE's women's division is at, or it's for lack of trying. I'm not sure. I don't think that the writing in the women's division has been strong. I don't think that they've put together compelling stories. I don't think that there have been any situations where the women felt like they could rightfully headline a Dynamite without some massive bloody stipulation. And I think that they have got to get to a point where that feels like it can happen. I mean, when you watch a WWE PLE, more often than not, at least one of the women's title matches feels like a top three match on the card. And I don't think there's ever been a scenario where the women's title match on an AEW pay-per-view didn't feel like strictly undercard stuff. I mean, just nowhere near main event level. And I thought that they were going to be able to get away from that and get above that, but they just haven't. And Zach, you're right. Like, Jamie Hayter was a good women's champion in the sense that she was consistently over with the crowd, which is a low bar, but one that
right.
the women in AEW have not been able to hit consistently. They just haven't. And, I mean, even someone like Saraya. I mean, Saraya was a huge star in WWE, and say what you will about, you know, her trials and tribulations, but she was consistently over, and she has been cold since, like, week three in AEW, and she's never recovered.
Yep.
So there's something with that division, and I said this back when Sasha Banks, you know, Mercedes Moné first became a free agent. What reason would she have to go to AEW at that time? There, if she's looking at the landscape of how women are presented and looking at the potential quality opponents that she has, her only answer is WWE if she wants to be in a major company. And since I don't know that things have changed since then. And, like, maybe she's burned her bridge with WWE for the time being, and her only option for a major company would be AEW. But I am not even sure at this point that Mercedes Moné would give the AEW women's division the kick that it needs to be taken super seriously. I think she'd be a great get. And, I mean, it would certainly be an improvement. But do I think that it's likely that she elevates the division beyond what it is now, or that she falls in line with everyone else? Unfortunately, like, I think it's the latter.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, she'd be a great get for sure. But, I mean, yeah, they have to have an infrastructure, like, around her where you still have good stories and you still have good opponents. And, you know, like the pieces are there. I think, you know, if Mercedes Moné came in and you did, you know, Mercedes against Britt Baker, like that's a money feud. Mercedes against Jade Cargill, I think that's a big time feud. Mercedes against Toni Storm, I think you get some money out of that. Like, I think there's a lot of good matches that she could have, but she wouldn't be able to kind of, like, turn the tide of the division
right.
without, you know, the better, like, without better writing and a better focus company-wide on that division. And it's weird because, like, if Mercedes Moné came in, and I think that some of this is happening, too, even in her New Japan run right now and the Stardom run, it's like she's a big star. And, like, her star power is just leaps and bounds above everybody that she's worked with so far post WWE. It just is. I mean, not that there have been bad matches and not that they've been, like, poorly built matches or anything like that, but she's just heads above, more popular than these other women's wrestlers that she's facing. And I don't think that changes too much in AEW. I mean, she's a significantly bigger star than Toni Storm, significantly bigger star than Britt Baker. Like, she just, and why wouldn't she be? She's at, you know, she's had a, what, gosh, like, 6-7 year run in WWE, maybe more than that. Like, so of course she's going to have that.
I mean, she would be, in terms of star power, I mean, I think you could argue she would be top 10 in the whole company, not just the women.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Right. For sure. And it's like, you have to have AEW as a company, you have to have an environment where she can elevate people up to her level. But that means time, you know, that means that the division gets time on a regular basis and gets good storylines and all of those pieces have to be in place for something like that to work. Now, again, if she's on the table and Tony Khan can sign her, obviously you're going to do that. But, you know, it doesn't, that alone, just signing her does not change the trajectory of things for that division.
Yeah, and I think, That's what they've been doing. I think they've been throwing new talent at the problem and hoping that will fix it. But they never build the talent up to a point where they're able to fix it. Like, they just injected Toni Storm in the division and threw the title on her the first time and thought that would solve all their problems. And obviously it didn't. Same thing. You can say the same thing about Saraya. They brought her in, and the idea that Saraya was now in the company was the big deal, but that's all there was. It was just that Saraya is here. There was nothing for her. It was just that she was there. So I think that's been their ongoing problem. Before we jump away from that, I wanted to say too, regarding Jade Cargill, that she presents another issue altogether in that if you want to move her to the AEW women's title proper, which I think is the right place for her, then you have to kind of strike a balance between quality wrestling and getting a character and getting the title over, because Jade is not going to be able to give you 15 to 20 minute AEW women's world title matches. What she is going to be able to give you is star power and elevation of the title. So there's going to be a trade-off there, and they have to decide if they're okay with that.
Good point. Great point. Really good point. All right, Sean, back over to you for a final point, perhaps. We are bumping up against our time here, man. But, give us a final point or question or comment.
Yeah, the last thing I wanted to ask you guys was going back to the Charlotte stuff when she came back Friday. It's kind of like the same thing in the WWE with the women's division, as far as they have their top stars that are way more defined than AEW. Obviously, you have your Becky, your Charlotte, your Bianca, your Asuka, you have big stars, Rhea. But when Charlotte came back, I didn't like the way they brought her back Friday. I just thought it was like, to come back, I don't need to make the line. I am, whatever. She deserves a title shot right away. Again, the thing about Charlotte that always bothers me is her character is just not very defined. I mean, they have her as a face right now, but it just feels kind of like, I'm just not excited about it. I mean, she's a big star, but I'm just like, she's not good as a face. She's a way more natural heel. I was curious what you guys thought about that segment Friday and kind of how she kind of came across and what you're thinking of her. She's a 15-time champion, but she's lost it 14 times, sometimes very quickly. I was just curious what you guys thought of that segment. And, Zach, I had one more quick question for you because I got to give you always a hard time about it. You always say on the canvas it's coming back. When is it coming back, man? Like, give me a hint. At least give me a hint, man, because I miss it, dude. I really do. I know I'm just joking, but I do. I miss it. It was one of the better shows. Even though all the shows are good, but that was a good one. And, Zach, I appreciate you, man. It's always fun talking to you, Brandon. It's always good talking to you guys. I appreciate y'all taking my call, as always.
Thanks very, very much. I appreciate it. Hope you have a really good week. The show will be coming back. It will be coming back. I'll say summer. It will be back this summer. Just waiting for the right time and some hours in the day to open up, but it will be back this summer, Sean. So there you go. But I appreciate it. Appreciate the kind words. Yeah. So we'll finish up on this topic, Brandon, with Charlotte Flair, and answer Sean's question here. To me, there's just an inherent issue with Charlotte Flair, and I think it reminds me of the same issue that WWE has had with Randy Orton for so many years, in that Charlotte Flair is a star and people react really positively to her, sometimes and, as a big time star, but she has such an inherent heel personality that, when people are cheering her for a while, like, she inevitably just becomes unlikable, because that's, I think, just her natural personality. I'm not saying she's a bad person, but her charisma is just way more effective as a heel. So she's constantly trying to balance this, okay, I'm a legacy star with and the positive reactions that come along with that, but I don't really know how to pull that off. Like, I don't really know how to pull off, legacy star babyface. Same thing with Orton. He would get these big reactions and, the RKO is over. But when it was time for him to tell stories and to be a babyface character, couldn't pull it off, because there's an inherent, nature of Randy Orton is this guy is a jerk. And he just was fighting that throughout his whole career. And I think Charlotte's in the exact same position. So no matter what, I think it's always going to be a little awkward with her. The line that she dropped on Friday with, I don't wait in line, I am the line. I think that there's baby faces in wrestling that could pull that off successfully. And I think it's a decent little line, given what story they were telling at that point. But just the delivery and like the like kind of like the smile on her face, it's just there's still something that's not likable about it when it comes out of Charlotte Flair's mouth. And to me, that just goes back to natural charisma. And it's hard to get around that because you want to put her out there. She's going to be in big time matches, but you know, it's a double-edged sword. You book her as a heel when, you know, audiences want to see her because she's a big star, or do you book her as a babyface and kind of just live with some of the disconnect there? And it's clear that WWE has picked the former on that, but you know, they're always going to be swimming upstream on some of this stuff, I think. And so I was fine with the segment. I thought it was okay. And I think, you know, Bianca Belair, you know, being around it is another factor to consider here in terms of where the women's division goes on SmackDown. But the broader point is I think they're stuck here with Charlotte Flair and they don't have a clear direction because there's a lot of moving parts in competing directions.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the segment, and the reason for that is because it felt to me like they shoehorned Charlotte Flair into another historic moment in the women's division, and that felt like it was supposed to be Asuka's moment. Asuka was presented with a brand new women's championship. They renamed the Raw women's title. That was her moment. Charlotte had no reason to be there, especially as a babyface. I mean, if you want to get someone heel heat and you want to interrupt a babyface celebration of being presented a redesigned championship, then by all means, get them heel heat. But for her to come out and be in that slot as a babyface, I thought worked against the whole thing. It also doesn't help that Asuka has never really clearly been defined as a heel. I mean, yeah, she spits mist, but like, it's kind of cool. Like she hasn't done a ton of underhandeds to make her inherently a bad guy. And it also hasn't helped that the last couple of matches she's had against Bianca, they've had split reactions, both at WrestleMania and then in Saudi. So they're in another tough position here with Asuka, who's supposed to be a heel, Charlotte Flair, who's supposed to be a babyface, and the crowd whose inclination is to cheer the opposite on both of them. So I think they're in a challenging position there. Charlotte, as you mentioned, Zach, there are problems with Charlotte inherently with her character and her presentation. Charlotte Flair is the John Cena and Roman Reigns of the women's division in the sense that it is impossible for the crowd to buy adversity against her because they know that at the end of the day, she is the company's chosen woman. She will always rise to the top. She will always get the title again. That's just what she does. She's Charlotte Flair. And that inherently is something you boo. We saw that with John Cena. They fought the tide for years. They kept him babyface despite what the crowd wanted to do, which was boo him every single chance they got. You saw it with Roman Reigns. They hated the guy. Then they finally turned him heel, and he became the hottest commodity in wrestling because he was finally in the right role. Charlotte Flair isn't much different. They're fighting against the natural reaction that the crowd has, which is that, one, Charlotte is naturally a heel, and two, her position within the company and how the fans perceive that position makes her a heel inherently. So I think that they're fighting an uphill battle. I wish that Charlotte could be presented as a character outside of the women's championship, but it doesn't seem like she can exist unless she's challenging for that title. Charlotte either has the women's title, is chasing the women's title, or is not on television. And I don't think that's good. The other women don't have that issue. Becky Lynch has been away from the championship for a while. Bayley has been away from the championship for a while. Bianca Belair is now away from the championship. Charlotte Flair is never away from that title unless she's off screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And again, like you fact, and like, what did you think about Bianca Belair on Friday? Like, was that, you know, just badass babyface Bianca Belair, or was it more like, hey, this is kind of like the beginning iteration of a whiny heel Bianca Belair. Like,
I can't,
which complicates things for Charlotte too, by the way.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to try to make Bianca Belair a heel and and Charlotte, you know, up against her as like babyface. Like, I don't know that that takes either. But what do you think of Bianca?
I don't think that that works either. I think that if you're worried about the reactions that Bianca's getting right now, and you turn her heel just to put her against weak babyface Charlotte, you're just going to flip the crowd back to Bianca. Either that, or you're going to split the difference and people just aren't going to care. So I think they're playing with fire with that. I mean, like, I don't feel like it's time to turn Bianca. I feel like she needs a little bit. I think she needs a little bit more aggressiveness to her character. And I think that if that's what they're doing, if that's what the intent is out of these last couple of weeks, then I think that they're headed in the right direction. But if this is just a move to turn her heel, I don't think it works. Like, I think there's more money on the table with Belair as a babyface right now. I think the only thing that might be really interesting to me would be to see her have a heel run with the Street Profits.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of leading Montez and Dawkins as with the three of them as heels. Otherwise, I don't know if I'm interested right now.
I'm not interested right now either, because I think you still want to go to – I think you still want to see babyface Bianca Belair against heel Charlotte Flair. Like, they have to do that first. I mean, I think that's a big match on SmackDown that they haven't been able to get to now just because of – different circumstances in the women's division, but that's there, and I think
and
it
Belair,
works better with Rizzo.
And Belair Ripley down the road too.
That's another one. Right. That's another big one. Yeah. Well, all right, man. Thanks so much for joining me on the show. Go ahead and plug all your work that you're doing for the Torch. It's great stuff on PLE and pay-per-view days. But I'll let you talk about it, Brandon.
Sure. Yeah, you can follow along with my work for PW Torch. Anytime there is a major PLE for WWE or pay per view for AEW, I am in the coverage seat alongside Wade. We have opposing reports during those big events, so you can get real time thoughts from both of us, and also follow along with coverage. If you're not watching the show live, or if you happen to miss something. So, yeah, you can catch those anytime there's a major AEW or WWE event right on pwtorch.com. And you can follow me at BLeClaire12 on Twitter if you'd like to engage with me more or hear any other random thoughts I might have during the week about wrestling and other things, too.
Very good. Very good. Brandon, last question for you. Are the Bears going to win 9 games this year?
Oh, man.
Do me a solid and say yes.
Oh, man. 9? Oh, no. Zach, I don't want
to.
No. I don't
we know that it's
hard.
No.
I don't want to break your heart, but, like, no? What's the schedule? What's the schedule? I haven't looked at their schedule.
It doesn't matter.
It matters. Come on. You got the – let's see. All right. Okay. I mean – I'm gonna go under,
that's
but
not great.
By much. Not by much.
Okay.
I'll give you like 7 or 8.
Okay. All right. Hey, look, they won 3 last year, so
yeah.
I'll take it. I'll take seven. All right. Very good. You can follow the PW Torch brand at PW Torch. You can follow me on Twitter at ZHadornTorch. Keep it locked all week long to PWTorch.com. We've got your news. We've got your show reports. We've got your editorial takes. All there. So make it part of your weekly wrestling fix at PWTorch.com every single day. You can also check us out over on YouTube. Just search PW Torch on YouTube and subscribe to the channel. We are live most days of the week. We had a brand new interview go up this week with former Impact World Champion Steve Macklin. We did the interview while he was world champion, so that is there. He talks about the responsibility of being the world champion, and he talked about kind of how he wanted his run to go, given the circumstances around Josh Alexander losing the title. We did, and also just talked about, like, you know, what how he works creatively within Impact Wrestling. So very fascinating conversation. It's up on YouTube now. Head over there, subscribe, hit the notification button so you know when we're live throughout the week. Thanks to our callers, Sean and Ryan. Thanks to Greg. Hopefully we did you proud, Greg. And appreciate everybody who listened here. So thank you. Thank you, Brandon. We'll catch you guys all next time. Appreciate it.